Hi, Libby.
Well, hello, Mary Lou, and this is Gadsden Rising, and I'm Libby Gadsden, and Mary Lou Van Houten is our co-host and producer. Today, our special guest is Justin Cook, and Mary Lou, can you tell the audience about Justin a little bit?
Yes. Thanks. Justin is a researcher and co-host of Dose of Reality Radio on TheRealNewsOnline.com. In the past, his research and activism has specialized in false flags, media involvement, controlled opposition, big pharma, and many other topics. Now he's been committed to promoting usury-free activism and trying to promote money reformers and the truth movement. We found each other on Facebook because we're both in that Architects and Engineers for Money Truth group. So thanks for coming on the show, Justin.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's, you know, really an honor. I always like to, you know, go on different shows and, you know, and have different people on, different activists, and hear different sides of what's going on. I think we all have a common enemy, and we realize that. So, you know,
yeah.
I think we need to, you know, put some solutions on the table and figure out what's what.
Yeah,
that for sure. And you've how long do you think that you've been awake and realized what's really going on in our country, in the United States?
2005-ish is when I, you know, I saw loose change, you know, like everybody else did, I'm sure. You know, started looking into a lot of this stuff. And it's just by 2008 or 9, I was on Facebook, so I was able to, you know, get in touch with a lot of other activists and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it's pretty much just, you know, been nonstop. And I didn't mean it to be, and I did, you know, but it just ended up, you know, turning into research has been like, you know, somewhat of a, that's really all I do besides working. And, you know, that's pretty much my hobby in my life. It's turned into, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's something we all have in common. You know, once we, once you fall in the rabbit hole, it's just, you never know where it's going to bring you.
Yeah,
or we can also say once you take the red pill, you can't go back. Sometimes we wish we could take a blue pill and just actually know everything we know.
I think about it sometimes. It's like, you know, would I rather be a sheeple? Would I rather be sitting there, you know, watching the Olympics and not realizing the big ritual going on? And, you know, and but, you know, you can't. It is what it is. And I think it's our duty once we've taken the red pill to try to, you know, it's one pill, you know, that big pharma doesn't control that we need to pass on to other people.
Yeah, good point.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
The red pill is the one thing that big pharma doesn't control.
Yeah, it is. Good. And true, too. And so, Justin, you're involved in a lot of things. Give our audience an idea. I know you're a radio talk show host. What's the name of your show, and where can audiences find you?
It's Dose of Reality Radio, and I'm a co-host with Brian Stavely. We're on www.therealnewsonline.com Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock. Sometimes we'll go three to 5 hours, usually a two-hour show or so, depending on, you know, usually have a guest or something like that early on, and then, you know, later on we'll just chop it up and, you know, get into current events and whatnot. But
okay, cool. And were you involved in the Ron Paul campaign at all, or?
You know, here's the thing. Back in 2008, I was, you know, very involved with, you know, Ron Paul politics and everything else. At some point, I got disillusioned by the whole thing. And I really just I don't see politics as being any type of, you know, to me, and especially to try to take it back from inside the Republican Party, to me is nonsensical. That's you know, that was my opinion on the whole thing. So
I think we all see the error of our ways here.
I don't even know what third parties now, because the system is so controlled, you know. So you know, what can we do? You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's would you describe yourself as an anarchist?
See, that's the thing. Now, yeah, I love to say, hey, I'm an anarchist, but on the other hand, I realize that there's always going to be some type of state over us. You know, so, I mean, I would say I'm a minarchist for the most part, but, you know, obviously – I'm not in favor of having rulers, but I kind of accept it as inevitable. Just try to get away from it as much as possible is pretty much all I, you know, can say for that matter right now, you know, unless something drastically changes.
And how do you feel about the Libertarian Party?
The LP is not terrible. I just think that there's been a lot of, you know, it's almost been the same thing as it's almost turning into, you know, the other parties as well. Cause, I mean, like this year, for example, like, you know, I was, I kind of was hoping Bill Still would get in. Gary Johnson got in as running for president. And I don't know, I like Bill Still's message a lot more as far as, you know, money and whatnot. And I found Gary Johnson to be very, you know, it's almost just like he's trying to be Ron Paul Jr., you know, and to me it didn't seem authentic at all. And I don't know, you know, like I said, it's another one of these things where it's just like the lesser evil, you know, and that's pretty much what I – you know, so, yeah, I would like to see the Libertarian Party thrive, but as of right now, it's so one-sided as far as, you know, being controlled. It's just I see no hope for really anything with politics. And until somehow we throw all of them out, you know, the only hope I see with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And changing the government into – something that's more representative of the people.
Yes, exactly. You know, when we have, you know, the same people that are in the government are, you know, they're beholden to corporations like Monsanto and, you know, and the rest of them are, you know, so under the wing of the military-industrial complex. And then, you know, you see what happens when somebody goes against the grain. You know, they get blackballed out of Congress. They get killed in a plane, a plane crash like Paul Wellstone did, or, you know.
Or Hale Boggs there.
Or
yeah,
JFK Jr.
Exactly, exactly. You know, Nancy Schaefer was another one.
Oh, yeah. Well, that wasn't a plane crash, but that was very suspicious circumstances.
That was a supposed murder-suicide, and she was going against the all-powerful CPS, Child Protective Services, and you know, another one of these dark entities that we call the government, you know, groups. Or
yeah, Justin, I don't know if you know this, but I live in Atlanta, so that's the Nancy Schaefer case was real close, you know, in my area.
Yeah, I bet. Cynthia McKinney was another one ousted from down there. There's someone that went over to she went over to Israel in one of the blockades, I believe, and also, you know, and said how Congress was controlled by had to sign an oath to Israel, and you know, it was just a lot of stuff like that they didn't want people hearing, you know. 9/11 as well.
Yeah, it's obvious that the powers that be are trying to squelch understanding of how the government works, what's going on, and especially the monetary system. And so I know that you're passionate about the monetary system. Tell us what you think about the monetary system as it exists right now.
Well, like everybody else, I'm against the privately owned Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just it's there to pretty much you know, and all central banks, you know, are there to just keep enslaving us by debt, you know, one way or the other, you know, and it's inflation, deflation, you know, they both have their drawbacks on it. And, you know, obviously, you know, we need to get rid of the Fed. There's no doubt about that. And the thing would be after that, where do we go, you know, if that was ever possible? You know, so I mean, that's where I think we start seeing, you know, different things.
Mm-hmm.
So are you involved in the End the Fed movement, Justin?
Not directly. I have, you know, I support them with you know what they're doing. But here's the thing: like I've gotten into it before with some of them. I look at it. Now I don't know if you guys know a lot about. I'm sure the gold standard. A lot of people are pushing for a return to the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
But, any, you know, quick research will look into it and see that 90% plus is owned by the elite, by the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
putting a gold standard on it just means that, you know, the ones who own the gold are going to be, you know, so it doesn't matter that there's a, you know, anything backing the money. It's still going to be the same system under the guise of, you know, of having gold-backed money. So, it's, you know, it's like it's no different than the Keynesian system, as far as just because you have something sound behind it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Gold can be manipulated as well. There's even monoatomic gold that the Russians are developing, you know. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. And that's one of the things that I think people, you know, have learned so much, you know, in the movement. It's come in your head to where it's like, you know, we need gold. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, it can be used to enslave us as well. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the best thing that I think we've seen possible was, not possible, but the best thing that I think I've seen brought to the table was the Zarlanga Act, which would have been for usury-free greenbacks. It had little support. As usual, nobody even really heard about it at the time. And, you know, and I think that would, it wouldn't fix us to where we want to be, but it would really cut the stealing down, you know, in at least to half of what it is.
Mm-hmm. And so are you in favor of a barter-type economy over a monetary system?
Oh, definitely. That's, mm-hmm. that's the thing is, you know, right now, what can we – barter is the oldest you know, form of banking that there is. You know, and that's
mm-hmm.
the one thing is, you know, barter is, you know, I give you an hour of my time, you give me some, you know, some tomatoes or whatever, you know, obviously. And I think that's one thing where everybody needs to get involved with. And I've been trying to learn more myself because I see that there's a lot of local currencies that are up that are thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Walton has the, I think it's Mountain Hours,
MP mm-hmm.
Hours,
yeah.
up in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Ithaca has like one of the longest running ones up in New York. You know, and they're springing up all over, and I think that's the one way we can get out from the, you know, under the government's wing at least,
mm-hmm.
you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and not have them issuing our money, or a quasi-government agency issuing our money.
Yeah.
And essentially, money in our society right now is based upon debt. And if we didn't have a debt society, in other words, it creates a debt society,
exactly.
rather than a society where people are free to just live without the strain and the stress of having to pay off loans and mortgages and credit cards and things like that, which I think most Americans are completely overwhelmed by. Would you say?
Oh, totally. So, you know, and here's another thing, too. I talk about it with a lot of people. Now, I'm 31 years old.
Uh-huh.
My whole generation growing up was told, you have to do good in school, you got to go to college, and it doesn't matter, you pay for college and you get out and you have a job.
Uh-huh.
Now, a lot of people I know are now, you know, strangled under $60,000, you know, student loans, and they're not even in the field they went to school for, you know, and...
Uh-huh.
I think that the college con was a good thing. It was a, you know, another huge thing that they put on. And it makes people think, too, so on the other end, where cognitive dissonance comes into play,
mm-hmm.
how many of my friends that went to college, they won't listen to a thing I say because,
yeah.
you know, they went to economics class and, this, you know, this guy told them this. They went mm-hmm. to, you know, history class. And you know, so, I mean, they think that degree gives them a sense of power, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up college, Justin, because, you know, you say college con, and it's also a college bubble, because I went to college in the 80s, and at least back then, you know, believe it or not, my 4 years of college was only $3,000, you know, not counting room and board. But then once, like in the state of Georgia, they have this HOPE scholarship, and they bring all these, you know, middlemen and everything, and all the student loans and everything, and the prices of tuition just skyrocketed. And so
poor
students have to do these horrible loans, and, you know, it costs so much more than it used to, you know, on top of, you know, everything else. What do you think about that?
You're 100% right. It's a monopoly, too, as far as, you know, who are the ones giving out the loan, the interest rate. We talk about interest in general being bad.
When you
look at some of the rates that you're asked to pay, and it's kind of, you know, it's, you're forced to do it. You've been accepted to the school, you know, it's where you want to go, and now you're going to go there, and it doesn't matter what you pay, you know. And it's another example of just, you know, government coercion into your everyday life, into making it, you know, that much harder for someone to, you know, so, you know, you're supposed to go and get a higher education and come out and be able to, you know, to make a living. And what, you know, that was the point of having colleges, not to come out and, oh, you know, I know people that are working as secretaries now that went for, it's insane.
And they feel lucky to have the work. Because there's a dearth of opportunity now. There's just very little. The fact is that people have to become independent and learn how to become independent of big corporations, something that we've all been ingrained with since kindergarten is to, you know, you work in school so you can go work for a big corporation. And it's just no longer the case, I think. What do you think, Justin?
Totally agree. I mean, you know, you're taught to eat this, drink this, you know, wear this brand. And I still, you know, everyone is so involved in this rat race, you know, around Christmas time especially.
Yeah.
You got to buy the, you know, you can't just buy the, you know, I look at my nephews and you know, they're 10 and 12 years old now. And they get so much shit for Christmas, so much stuff that, and the next day they're not, you know, it just goes on the floor and it's right back to the Xbox and, you know, and it's, yeah, part of my language. It goes right back to the Xbox and right back to Nintendo and that's the whole generation is like that. And, you know, we know about neuro-linguistic programming, you know, and as far as stuff like that goes. And what are they doing? They're creating a nation of zombies that are going to be able, they're going to, you know, want that job. They're going to be sitting in Nevada bombing, you know, foreign countries and going home, you know, and eating dinner like they didn't, you know, like they just had a regular day at work type. You know, it's as far as, you know, switching gears there, but, you know, with the war games and everything else and just the consumer society, you know, it's crazy. It really is.
Yeah. And on top of all these presents that are so nicely wrapped and in boxes, and they're made often by people who are being paid pennies per hour, maybe a dollar a day, maybe two, maybe three, but probably not much more than that. And I think increasingly the world is becoming a world of slavery to create junk, basically, that then we're told to want on television and in mass media. And children in particular, I think Christmas is a great time when they're being indoctrinated into thinking that that certain things are must-haves or should-haves or just, you know, granted to them. And they don't realize exactly where they come from, these toys, and how they're made. And increasingly, I'm worried that we're having a world of where we're getting a lot of cheap goods, but you know, they're not being made in an ethical manner.
No, they're not. They had the Apple company that had suicide nets put up outside of them.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I think yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday.
What does that say about your company? You know, if people are so. You know, their job bothers them. That's not a job. That's slavery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you can't walk out and say that I quit, then that means for some reason either, you know, your family's not going to eat or whatever, but, you know, or you're actually going to be harmed if you walk out that door. There's something wrong with that. And the fact that, you know, you look at an iPod is you know, and Apple products, every other person in America owns them, you know, and it's...
Mm-hmm.
you know, how, and that's the thing here too. I mean, it's hypocrisy. You know, even some people, it's like, you know, how many people that we know are even, you know, activists that have iPhones and have this and that. I mean, and they have to get the new one every year. You know, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I do see the stuff like that going down as far as among people that are awake, but my other friends forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's I think essentially it's coming to America now. You know, whereas Americans they're seeing lower wages, and they're seeing that their benefits are being obliterated, and they're working for temporary agencies that are loaning them out to big corporations with no kind of security or any kind of benefits, health insurance. Or decent wages, you know, and no,
yep.
Certainly no quote unquote job security, which I think is an oxymoron. There's no such thing, really.
Oh, no, definitely.
Yeah. Do you know people in your circle who are have seen a change or who can't seem to get into the quote unquote system and feel locked out?
I'm locked out right now. You know, I mean, I don't have a job. I have a couple, like, you know, I got arrested a couple times in my early 20s, stuff like that.
Oh.
And you know, stupid fighting and stuff like that, and you know, and things like that. And now I can't. I don't have a trade, so you know, I do work, but it's off the books. You know, I'm out. You know, landscaping and stuff like that, because I can't get hired by any of these corporations if I wanted to, you know. I'm not the only one. Everybody I know is like this. And I live in Connecticut, which is, you know, supposedly the richest state in the country, so.
And that's sad. If you're in one of the richest states and you're finding that you're not able to have a life that can give you your basic needs without struggling.
Oh yeah, of course. Everybody I know has moved back in with their parents. Even people, you know, that went out and got married, had kids. You know, a lot of them are back in with their parents, either because the parents lost their job or they lost their job, or you know, they can't afford childcare. It's just so many different ways. It's like, you know, it's pretty much like austerity's hit us in their, but they haven't really told us yet, you know, and they're just sitting there watching us pay for mistakes that we didn't make, you know, on money that they stole from us, and yet we're sitting back and we're paying for the mistakes already. And at the same time, people in the same, you know, the same areas as us are driving around in Mercedes-Benz, getting paid $100,000 a year, and are looking at us like we're nuts. Like, look at your neighbor, pal. You know, he look at the old guy down the street on Social Security, who's, you know, trying to feed his pets and trying to live, you know, an everyday life. And it's everybody's hurting except for, you know, maybe 20%, and they don't care. You know, they're just going through life, living the, you know, going through the paces. The rat race and everything else, and the other 50% are trying to be like them, and then the rest of us see what's going on. I think it's pretty much a good state of affairs.
And what do you think about your parents' viewpoints? How do they see? I mean, because they saw a different life, they didn't see things quite as dire as they are now. How do your folks feel about what's going on?
Well, my mother is pretty awake. I woke her up a few years ago. But as far as, like, my father and stuff, like, he just looks at it like, you know, you're supposed to get a job, shut your mouth, and eventually things will work out for you. But, you know, they're seeing, though, for example, my grandfather that just died 2 years ago, he worked his whole life for one company doing air conditioning. And right before he was going to retire, the guy that I think it was his boss or his boss's son, somehow squandered their his pension. So this guy worked his whole life, didn't go on family vacations and stuff. You know, I mean, he went on some, but didn't go on a big one to Italy, just to be a loyal employee, and ended up getting screwed over in the end. And and he got nothing for it. Had to work another 10 years, you know, while he was retired. So, I mean, it's just, I think people are understanding, but they still don't know why, and that's what I think the problem is, you know, and who's doing it to us, and that's another thing. Feudalism is turning, you know, the right side of poor people against the left side of poor people, and that's the biggest problem I think that faces us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely. There's no question about that, and I think especially in a state like Connecticut, you see an enormous difference between the haves and the have-nots. My mom came from Hartford, Connecticut, and you either have money or you don't. It seems to me that Connecticut's a very a state where you have a very wide gap between the upper class and the
oh, yeah.
You think so? You agree, Justin?
Well, let me tell you this. Right now, where I live, you can right outside of New Haven, you can go to a neighborhood that has $5 million houses in it, and mm-hmm. within 10 minutes, you could be in one of the, you know, worst ghettos in America.
Mm-hmm.
So and I went to school with kids that were millionaires, and I went to school with kids that had nothing to eat and were on welfare and everything else. And this is, you know, in a suburban school and everything. It's so crazy how it's, you know, everybody's all stuck together, and you know, there's two different sides of the fence, you know, and some people living along either side of that fence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Justin, we're going to take a short break. We're going to have some commercials, and we'll be right back. We're going to come back to the monetary system, the economy, and the war economy. This is Justin Cook, and I'm Libby Gadsden, and we're on Gadsden Rising with Mary Lou Van Houten, our co-host and producer. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer, for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up three people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, Solavay.com/freedomizer. Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
Destruction in the background, our economy on the fiscal cliff, FEMA camps, and specter of dark plots on the American agenda. We're being herded like sheep to the very gates of hell. Join me, your host Mars, co-host Lady Deanna, where the unfolding stories in the news and Bible prophecy. Tyrannical forces are hard at work, ready to deny your very liberty. The Watchers Prophecy News. Only on www.freedomizerradio.com. every Friday at 5 p.m. Central Time. Don't let the cheese trucks run you down.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Blessings to you all. Servant Emmanuel here. You know, these days everyone is searching for the truth, which is why I'd like to invite everyone to join me for the Sound Doctrine Christian Ministries programs every Tuesday afternoon at noon Pacific Standard Time, and now on Sundays at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. We'll always have prayer, biblical studies, and take your prayer requests as well as the occasional guests. We'll still have each week's two-minute warning and breakpoint commentaries from the Colson Center, as well as great gospel music. So join us in our chat rooms at freedomizerradio.com or call in and listen at 347-324-3704. And remember, who the Son sets free is free indeed.
You're listening to Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. You can also listen and participate by calling 347-324-3704. Like Freedomizer Radio on Facebook and subscribe to Libby Gadsden on Facebook. We're back.
Well, thanks, Mary Lou, and this is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden. We're talking to Justin Cook, and basically we're going on about the economy and the money system and how it's enslaving most people. Justin, what would you want to say to people about the money system in you know, like a capsule? Like if you're talking to a complete stranger and they don't know anything and they don't understand why they're in debt and why they can't get a job and how come we're involved in so many wars and yet it doesn't seem like we're that that we're that threatened. And how does this tie into the money system? How would you simplify telling people this?
You know, it's a very easy thing to say. You know, you just ask them, hey, so, you know, the country's in debt, what, $17 trillion or however much money? Exactly who do we owe this money to? And you're going to hear a long pause, and they may see China, and then you inform them that, wait, the Federal Reserve's been buying up bonds back from China. So, you know, at most you can maybe say what China owns about 9% of the so-called debt. And then when you tell them that, you know, the people that own the Federal Reserve is who this money goes to, you know, that's really, I think that's the easiest way to say it. You know, I mean, is you know, where does this money go and why, you know, how are we so behind, you know? And then, you know, I usually refer them to The Money Masters by Bill Still. I think that does a great job of breaking it down and as to how they've manipulated money over the centuries and manipulated economies. So I think that's you know, the easiest way to say it.
Yeah. I think that it's still very fuzzy for people how connected we are to our money and how important it is to understand how money affects us. For example, local currencies are springing up all over the United States, and the reason why is so that people can become free of an enslavement to a money system that doesn't really give them back what they put into it, so we can have a more equitable exchange of goods and services, I think. And that's why it's important to support any kind of movement for local currencies. Do you have a local currency in Connecticut, Justin?
There are a couple. I'm not involved in any. But, you know, I just want to say one thing about it. You know, like you were just saying about that. Here's the thing. Picture you doing business with somebody and then, you know, without the middleman. That's what local currency is. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're doing business, you know, with you and a company decide to do business together. Well, you know, all you're doing is you're using the local currency instead of going through the government, who's now going to tax it and going to, take their chunk out and everything else, and then give, you know, the rest. That's, I think, the easiest thing that, you know, the local currency is, and there's no interest, you know, on either end or anything like that. And I think that, you know, it's something that, you know, we need to do, especially if we're, you know, the ones that are sick of, you know, of paying all this, you know, garbage and knowing that we're getting robbed. Well, you know, if we can get out of using their money as much as possible, then why not? Let's do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, and I think what we also have to understand is that the gold standard is not necessarily the answer. It's a possibility to go back to the gold standard. But at the same time, the powers that be made, as they deflate the currencies, it could deflate the price of gold. Have you heard this as well, Justin?
Exactly, yeah. No, that's another big thing, too. Everyone talks about inflation, but in reality, deflation, it would be, you know, our biggest enemy when it comes down to that. You know, and again, it comes down to the thing. It's, you know, it's only, people say, yeah, it's intrinsic and whatever, but it only has what value you put to it, you know, like any other commodity, like anything else. And if you have people, you have the Rothschilds in London fixing the price of gold every day as well, you know, it's very easy to see it getting manipulated, especially if, you know, if they own the whole thing and run it on a system of fake scarcity like everything else. I think that's another thing that people don't understand about is the fake scarcity. As it applies to that, it applies to diamonds, it applies to almost, you know, applies to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a tactic that they use often. Like we heard, you know, back in the late 90s about peak oil. You know, and many people have proven peak oil is a myth, that oil is, in fact, abiotic and reforms itself. You know, mm-hmm. It's not just fossil fuels and, you know, dinosaurs that died and, you know, went to, you know, that's all been... mostly proven false, although the, you know, some mainstream scientists would disagree. But that's pretty much, you know, like everything else, it's just like they do with, like I said, with the diamonds. You know, they put a certain amount out, they charge a, you know, a huge fee on it, make every guy that's going to get married think that he has to go and buy this big rock for his girlfriend or whatever. And, you know, there's another situation where we're talking about, you know, you got these people that are actual slaves working in a diamond mine. You know,
diamonds are a huge con. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead, Marley.
I'll happily wear cubic zirconia. Nobody can tell the difference.
well, you know what, guys? Actually, too, and if there's somebody that really, if you have a friend that's dead set on buying a diamond, there is legit, they're man-made diamonds. They're not
fake.
Yeah,
cubic zirconia, right?
No.
There's another one, too.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's real diamond. It's made with a machine. Yes. And that's the whole thing about it. So, you know, you can put it right up next to the Hope Diamond or any diamond in the world, and they can replicate it, and it's the same. That's where you get your they came out, and that's where they're using them for industrial means, for, you know, drill bits and stuff like that. And that's how they, you know, they first started making it, but now they're making actual designer jewelry diamonds, and you can buy one for about one quarter the price of a, you know, of a slave diamond, of a blood diamond.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard about this. So they come under several commercial names. I don't want to advertise them, but and they look a lot better than real diamonds. They have the same hardness, the same brilliance, the same qualities that a top diamond has for a fraction of the price. And so people should check it out, and or just not bother, you know.
Right.
It's
right. If you need a rock to express the, if you need a
yeah.
rock, cut you off, but if you need a rock to express your love to somebody else, you know, in a ring of Saturn, then, is it really that strong? Or, you know, that's the
I don't
way
even
I
need the
at.
Cubic zirconia. I'll just take a little thing, a ring of silver, and I'm good.
Yeah, it is definitely. Oh, and my goodness, the commercials and the publicity on diamonds is amazing. It's
mm-hmm.
so intense, and it does give people a genuine false want. You know, we have
mm-hmm.
a lot of these false wants and needs. I must have an iPad. I must have a diamond. I must have a certain car, and it goes on and on and on. And then there are people that just don't have water to drink in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to understand that you'd gladly give your 20 grand diamond in for a glass of water if you had nothing to drink for a week, you know?
Exactly.
So you
can't eat diamonds,
like
you
that.
Can't eat gold. You know, and that's another, just to get the hypocrisy, like you see like hip-hop stars wearing these big gold, you know, big platinum diamond chains and everything, and you want to think, you know, that's supposed to be your fellow black man in Africa that, you know, that took that out of the ground at slave prices, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about, you know, so I mean, it's the biggest hypocrisy, and it's pushed like everything else. It's been brainwashed into our culture. That was if you think that hip hop wasn't being used to sell, diamonds and jewelry, and, you know, it's just like
blame
everything
blame.
Else, like, right, just like, you know, and that was the thing back into gangster rap when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
All these politicians and these bankers and whatever went out and bought stock in private prisons, you know, knowing that there was going to be a big boom in it. They had, you know, supposedly there's a whistleblower on record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won't put his name on record, but said there was secret meetings held around 1988, 1989, right, you know, when NWA and all that came out, saying, hey, buy stock in private prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
hey.
That's one of my, sorry, I just want to say this, one of my big horrors is private prisons. What were you going to say,
yeah.
Meredith?
Oh, I was going to say that, Justin, it sounds like you know a lot about diamonds. I've also heard that they're not as rare as they make you think, that they're, you know, even though they're, I've heard about the blood diamonds, but that
right.
they're also kind of plentiful, lying on the ground, but they kind of make this false scarcity of them. And,
right. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is. It's false scarcity, and that's handled by, what do you call it, De Beers.
The De Beers.
De Beers has been doing this, you know, forever, and they have warehouses stuffed of them. They have warehouses stuffed full of diamonds, you know, and the main thing about them is they let out a certain amount, you know, and then they get. See, what happens is now you have a couple like ones that aren't blood diamond mines that have sprung up, and one in Russia, and one in Canada. Now, De Beers went on big smear campaigns against them and tried to stop them from getting, all this stuff and whatnot, just like they did with the man-made diamonds. And the reason for that is because, you know, that now threatens, you know, their scarcity. If someone else is putting diamonds out on the market, now they have to, you know, but still, they've been at it so long that they have such control over it.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's at least there is honest diamond mines, you know, getting into the business, but it's still not as big of a, you know, De Beers, and who is also funded. I think it was one of the Rothschilds was involved in De Beers too. And, I forget who else. I'd have to look it up, but regardless, it's been elites, you know, like everything else, it's been the same elite ruling factions that have controlled this stuff.
It's just one of the areas where we're being controlled. Besides having to drive a car that's powered by gasoline and or diesel,
right.
and having to plug into the grid, meaning use the electrical system, and it just goes on and on. And diamonds is just, I think, an extreme example of a totally unnecessary commodity that is actively pursued by so many regular Americans. I mean, it's a big business, huge business. They've had a tremendous success, and And just getting back to local currencies, I live in a small city in France, and all across France, people are trying to create local monetary currencies. Everyone's got the feeling that they're being hoodwinked, and they realize that we could probably get more for our money by having a local currency. So it's not just in the States; it is a it's definitely happening over in Europe as well. Is a moving toward local currencies.
Anthony Michels, who I've had on my show as well, he started the Gelray or Gelray, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, in the Netherlands, and that's also thriving as well.
And see the Real Currencies blog guy?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, I've invited him, but we hadn't gotten him on yet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because he said it's kind of late for him.
he's a good interview. I'll recommend him to you guys if you want. I don't know if my poll, if me having him on before will help sway him in any way. But I think because he's in Europe, he's on a different time zone and stuff too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Hello?
Are you there, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay. And let's talk about current events for a minute here. I don't think anybody has not heard about Newtown. It's all over the news here in Europe. It's been on every station constantly.
Really? Even in Europe? Wow.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, it was the first thing I saw the other morning when I got up. I'm like, okay, here we go again.
Yeah.
What is your take on Newtown, Justin?
You know, It's still, here, let me tell you something crazy. Now, I live probably about 40 miles or so from there.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother actually isn't, she runs a school cafeteria. And last week they had a conference there on the 12th. And she was at that same school 2 days before it happened. I don't know, but I look at it and right away it looks like a government op.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a false flag, and at this point, I hate to say it because they pull your heartstrings with this stuff, and it's like you hate to really go, this is like worse than 9/11 almost, because you have these kids, kindergarten kids, but. I don't know. I've seen some interviews and stuff, and I've seen, there's all the information that's put out, and it just, to me, it seems like it's possibly a fake event, and I hate to say it, but I don't know. I think I'll wait, to say that 100%, but it just seems like Aurora was the same way, or at least, totally staged, where we had, government hitmen or MKL, whatever you want to call it, type job. But I don't know. To me, it's not adding up. A lot of this stuff. And it seems like they flooded the alternative media with all these different theories and information just to keep us going in all these different directions.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen anything like this where there's so much disinformation out at first? It's really, really stinks to me.
Facebook just flooded with it.
Yeah. Mary Lou or Justin, give me an example of some of the disinformation.
For example, you hear right away that there was a second gunman in the woods. You hear first that they found the shotgun was on him. Then it was in the car. First they found four guns. Then they then they said he used a Bushmaster. The fact that they said the mother was a teacher, and now she's a doomsday prepper. It's gone so far, and now we're even hearing the Labor scandal thing come up. And I do want to say this because this is important to get out there right now. As far as that goes, there's no evidence that even Robert Holmes, James Holmes' father from Aurora, was set to testify. That all comes from Sorcha Fowl.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And it's a disinfo thing. So I want to, because a lot of people are posting it, and you know, I think stuff like that, we need to, you know, be our own police kind of and stop it in its tracks before it gets out there, because that's what they want. They want us out there, you know, reporting nonsense. You know, and here's mm-hmm. the thing. The father was a General Electric vice president of the,
the
financial part of
the shooter.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's definitely odd. Who knows what he may know or what, you know, what may not, but, the LeBor thing so far is I've seen that I haven't seen any real info to correlate it to.
Mm-hmm. And that one thing I did see also, it appears to be a way to try to make people hate guns. And that the gunman's mother was accused of stockpiling arms in her house. That's one thing I did see on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to a doomsday prepper because she had a couple guns and whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the only thing I did see that seemed like, okay, this does seem like a way to try to discredit anybody who's pro-gun freedom and against gun control. That's the only thing I did say, well, now this is getting weird, you know, so you think it's possibly a false event that was created, and that's made to move people's emotions in a certain direction. Is that right?
Yes, and that's a lot of thing around a lot of these events too. Is it's, you know, they put out so it's so much. Look at the knee jerk reactions we heard right away. Like I saw different things from my news feed from people like I know in real life and stuff like. Oh, we need metal detectors in every school. We need.
Oh no.
It's insane. Oh yeah, and I wanted to say, I didn't say much till later once the emotions died down a little bit. But you know, that's, you know, you got to be careful what you wish for because mm-hmm. you know, yeah, everybody wants their kids to be protected. Everyone wants their family to be safe. But in the end, you know, do you really want to be in a prison? You know, do you really want your schools to be a prison? Do you really want you know, and then of course, to right now, I think that the main thing is I'm not worried about all guns in particular. I think maybe the assault guns or anything long rifles are going to, be, you know, possibly be are being targeted in this one, as mm-hmm. well as anybody that, you know, that goes against the normal, you know. And now here's the funny thing is you have groups like FEMA. You know, telling the people that they should have supplies for stocking up, but yet then again, the media is demonizing you in the next step, saying anyone that has anything to protect themselves, and you know, anyone that has stock, you know, food stocks is now should be, you know, classified as a terrorist or whatever. So I mean, it's so much, you know, double speak here, you know, just in every facet of it. But
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just it's too much. You know, it's. Every you know, it's the media. What can you say? They're there to, mm-hmm. to put fear in people and to jerk your emotions a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you find the people around you are buying into it.
Oh yeah, oh of course.
Yeah.
You know, the only people that aren't are the you know. But here's the thing: they're getting anyone that's on the fence about it. Those people that they're pulling over the fence. That's pretty much what. The staunch gun advocates and the people that realize that hey if you actually had didn't have gun free zones maybe there might have been you know a teacher there that could have popped somebody that could have shot the gunman or whatever you know what I mean
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that and I'm not saying that you know we need teachers to be armed because that could be crazy too but you know it wouldn't it's just another thing of like freedom you know to where you shouldn't have to, you know, if you're a gun owner and you've done what you can, you know, you've done what the state has asked of you to get that gun or whatever, why is it a big, you know, it's like we've just seen a couple of massacres averted the past few weeks alone of people that shot a gunman that wanted to do, a mass casualty situation that wanted to do a big shooting. So,
yeah,
you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so, I mean, it's really just the other side of the coin, other side of the coin that the media refuses to show. That's
mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. It's a right that every American has, and it's just one more right that I think we're being told that we cannot have any longer, like our rights to a trial with an attorney, our rights to freedom without indefinite intention, and I mean, we can go on and on, but I think it boils down to a lack of representation by the people of their government as well. And we'll get back into that, Justin. Now we're going to take a commercial break, and this is Gadsden Rising. I'm Libby Gadsden. Our special guest is Justin Cook, and our co-host and producer is Mary Lou Van Houten. We'll be right back.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available, committed to buying only from the growers when they can, and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
AntiWarTees.com is to promote anti-war activism, unlocking minds and shattering paradigms. By purchasing one of these t-shirts, you become an anti-war activist. www.antiwartees.com, bringing peace and human rights to the mainstream. Buy it, wear it, become it. Anti-war tees.
There's a saying that the only thing certain in life is death and taxes. Well, they should include hard drive failure as well. You can ensure your data is safe by using Maximum Archive's online backup solution. By securely backing up the Maximum Archive servers, your data is protected from fire, theft, or simple hard disk failure. Don't let your data go unprotected. Sign up for Maximum Archive today. Use partner code Freedomizer at checkout time and help fund the Freedomizer Radio Network. That's MaximumArchive.com.
Hey there, Freedomizers. This is JC from the Sports Lounge. Join us for 3 hours on Saturdays as we take a break from politics to discuss sports at FreedomizerRadio.com. Come and join us each Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Pacific, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again, as I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, y'all, this is Ron with Ron's Media Matrix. I would like to invite you to listen to my show every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for our international listeners, that's 1,800 hours to 2,200 hours Greenwich Mean Time right here on Freedomizer Radio. I always interview a broad spectrum of guests ranging from entrepreneurs to the eclectic. I also like to keep you up to date on the latest breaking news in geopolitics, world events, astronomy, technology, science, and how it relates to the 21st century and an emerging global order. Be sure to visit our website at freedomizerradio.com, take part in our lively chat room, visit our sponsors, or read breaking news articles on our Twitter feed. You can also find out more about the wide variety of shows and hosts at freedomizerradio.com. If you'd like to comment or speak with a guest during the show, just give us a call at 347-324-3704.
You're listening to Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com. You can also listen and participate by calling 347-324-3704. 3704. Like Freedomizer Radio on Facebook and subscribe to Libby Gadsden on Facebook. We're back.
Well, thank you, Mary Lou, and this is Libby Gadsden, and we're on Gadsden Rising, and our special guest is Justin Cook, and Mary Lou Van Houten is our co-host and producer. Justin, I wanted to go over a little bit about what you think about the war economy. I know in Connecticut you've got the West Point Academy, you've got a lot of guys signing up for the military. Do you see that around you? In your society, in your community?
Oh, of course. You know, and as the economy gets worse, the more people sign up. The less jobs there are, the less opportunities. People see college. Hey, maybe it's not an opportunity now. They're going to sign up. It's like anything else. And, you know, it's just like other times, but, you know, now they've been hit with this, you know, false patriotism and, you know, the whole war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, garbage that, you know, it's there's no shortage of Americans that are willing to go overseas against someone that's never done anything to them and, you know, and kill them and come home and now more are killing themselves than they're dying over there. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's how do you feel about the government threatening to invade Iraq? I mean, Iran, I'm sorry.
Oh, Iran. Iran, Syria. I think that, you know, if we learned any lessons from the past, it's that, you know, we have no business in these places. As far as Iran goes, you know, it's really just, it just goes to show that, you know, just like Iraq, just like Afghanistan, you know, what are we doing? We're going to these countries and taking their resources. And, you know, the sad thing about it is it doesn't even trickle down, you know, to you and I. So, I mean, I don't even understand when we get these, you know, very patriotic, you know, I say patriotic meaning, you know, warmongers, false patriots in reality. But, you know, these warmongers that are so eager to bomb this country and bomb that country. But yet, you know, they're not even seeing any of the, you know, gas prices are higher than ever. The economy is worse than ever. There's no, you know, there's not even jobs from the war like there was in World War II. You know, these people are clearly going against their own interests, you know, and it's only propaganda that's to blame. That's the only thing that you know, you can really blame it on, in
mm-hmm.
Propaganda and ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you know, there's this old saying that keeps going around that war helps the economy, and it's baloney.
It's
nothing. It's only helping big corporations make more money. And I wish that more people understand that there's no such thing as a vibrant war economy. War economies are horrible. They usually bring in depression. They bring in a lack of jobs, except if you want to work for the military. You know, so it's all part of the problem that we're having, and it's part of the whole design with bankers, is that bankers create money out of thin air, and that creates debt that people then have to pay off and are enslaved to, and on top of it all, then the money that they get from the population goes into creating a war machine that then creates enormous sums of power and money for them to use in order to increasingly control people. So, you know, it all just keeps, you know, falling in step with the whole idea that there is definitely an agenda to put people under control as slaves in this world. And anybody who doesn't think so it just isn't paying attention. What do you think, Rob?
You know, totally agree. It's and now we see it is going forward. You know, I think right now is you know, besides the war overseas, now people don't see it at home, but what we're seeing here is slow kill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is, you know, they don't have to shove a AK-47 or, you know, an M-16 in our face and kill us. You know, we're killing ourselves. But you know, these people overseas, they're being bullied. They have no one to stand up for them. And like I said, you know, when it comes to us, though, we're being killed slowly, so that eventually, you know, there's not going to be, you know, enough awake people. All they want you to do is to work, pay, get into debt, and then die of cancer by the time you're 40 or 50 years old. When you're not an able-bodied worker anymore. You know, mm-hmm. And then we get into transhumanism and stuff like that, and how far, you know, are they really trying, you know, are they doing this because they're going to replace us? You know, it really makes you wonder.
It does. Go ahead, Mary Lou.
That reminds me of the Georgia Guidestones. I'm sure you're familiar with that, right, Justin? Yeah. How supposedly they want to get the population down to 500 million.
You know, it makes you wonder, and I don't know if that, you know, obviously that is the famous number on the Guidestones, but it makes you wonder, maybe, you know, even if their goals, you know, say twice that, you know, say a billion, even, you know, looking at that, like, what is that to, you know, to us now? That's still, you know, seven times less than what we have now. So I mean, it's going to take, you know, and that's the thing. I look at it, I don't see it happening overnight, but I see it, you know, being a long drawn out thing. And just every generation, if you notice it, is getting, you know, a little bit less, you know, is getting more compliant, less individualized. You know, they're taking away people's, you know, identity for this mass, you know, for, you know, it used to be the national identity. Now it's the globalist identity. You know, the fact that they want you to look at yourself as, you know, a world citizen or what, you know, whatever it is. It's just the propaganda just keeps getting different and different as we go along. But, you know, I think they are closer to global government than they've ever been. You know, obviously every day they get closer and closer to it. And it's just the idea of selling it to the Americans, because I think that we're the last to, you know, the last that are still holding on to, you know, some sort of sovereignty, regardless of the fact that we've been sold out. And, you know, even if you talk about the Constitution, the Act of 1871, you know, really makes us a corporation as it is. But I mean, you know, still we still have a strong national identity. You know, we don't want to go down to the bankers or whatever, the money masters. But the sad thing about it is, if we don't wake up soon, we're done, because it's so far full, you know, it's so in full swing that I don't know what to do anymore. There's, you know, you look at people and they are brain dead. They really are. They do not think for themselves. They're incapable of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people think that they're kind of losing. Like Hillary Clinton came out that time and said, oh, we're losing the information war. And what do you think about that, Justin?
You know, I think that they're, you know, there's a small part of it that's battling them, but I think for the most part, they're not losing this. I think that if anything, they're getting, you know, more and more, you know, they're doing better at dividing. So, I mean, if anything, you know, so I think that's more what they're doing now is more than ever, too. I think, you know, I wasn't alive during the Vietnam War times, but I don't know. I can't imagine a time when America has been more divided than it is now, you know, in modern times. And I think that, you know, it's headed towards eventually race wars. It's headed towards class wars. It's headed towards, you know, austerity and the whole thing is, how many Americans really know their enemy? You know, how many Americans realize that, you know, these people at the top have gone and taken over, you know, both political parties, the whole media and everything else, to make sure that we all hate each other, you know, and that we all, you know, cannot be on the same page. And I think that's the big, it's just a divide and conquer is, I think they're brilliant at what they're doing. Edward Bernays would be, you know, more than proud of the propaganda effort that they put out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been amazing how successful they've been.
Yeah, and for the audience, Edward Bernays was kind of like the father of PR, right, public relations, and he wrote a book. And what's the background on him, Justin? Do you know?
He's the father of propaganda, modern propaganda, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's yeah. If you want to read about Bernays, it's some amazing stuff. Just he was another one of these social engineers, and we have all if anyone reads 1984 or Brave New World or Huxley and all, these people, they obviously study Bernays as well and realize that what they were going to eventually put this stuff into practice. My guess, like Huxley and Orwell and a lot of these people were insiders, because no way could they have gotten this dead on to what we're looking at nowadays, as far as 1984 and stuff.
And wasn't Orwell's real name Eric Blair? Isn't that right?
Oh, I don't know.
That's just off the top of my head.
Well, that's funny you say that about Aldous Huxley. I'm actually friends with his granddaughter.
Really?
And she's very neutral about social issues, which is odd for somebody who's Aldous Huxley's granddaughter. But she does find my political posts on Facebook very interesting and informative. My point, I guess, being is that what makes you think Aldous Huxley was an insider?
I think that most of these people are. Him in particular, I can't think of any point more than anything. But almost all these people that, for example, like the Wachowski brothers. Now they're the Wachowski siblings, because one of them had a sex change, I guess. But
Wachowski brothers, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, the ones that made The Matrix.
Yeah.
I look at all these people, and I think that there's no way that they don't have, that Hollywood's not pumping them full of, or they're maybe, part of some secret society that they're being told this stuff, because the stuff that they're putting out is so dead on that it's unbelievable that they're not keyed in, I mean, it's a blanket statement I know that I made about Huxley and Orwell, but, I have to wonder, because anybody, that can be that dead on that long ago, just like Albert Pike when he supposedly predicted the Three World War, he was as much of an insider as can be. So I mean, I think it's the same, the same way. Yeah, he didn't write it. He did actually in Morals and Dogma, but I mean, he didn't write the World War III part in that. But it's just something I think the elite like doing it. They like,
so you're saying that in order for them to have so much understanding and knowledge about what's going on, that they'd have to be an insider. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. And I think that they do that on purpose. I think they leak information like that to these people, that are writers and filmmakers on purpose, because they feel like they have to, it's predictive programming. They have to, it's part of their weird religion or whatever you want to call it, that they feel they have to show us some part of their, agenda, so that, they can, it makes the ritual all go down better or whatever. But, if you look at, 9/11, how many examples of predictive programming there was, it's amazing. It's the same thing with every, major, false flag since then.
Yeah, it is something that a lot of people have brought up about Ron Paul too, and a lot of other, for example, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. I think it's true for certain people. I think we have to be careful though that we don't label everybody who's coming out as strongly as opposed to the powers that be as being there's a word for it, if counter or something. I'm sorry?
COINTELPRO?
Yeah, COINTELPRO. We have to be a little careful. I don't think Julian Assange is, for example, but he was accused of it several times by many political friends of mine, and I think the proof is that he's been totally squelched. I mean, you just don't hear about him anymore, and I don't even know if he's out in Ecuador yet or if he's still in the Ecuadorian embassy.
I found Assange's story to be very funny, too, personally. I don't know. Here's the thing about Assange, is the fact that, here was a guy that was supposedly on the run. We all know if these people want you, they're going to get you. Another thing was the Rothschild-owned magazine, The Economist, I believe they gave him an award a few years before that, and other stuff about him being his mother belonging to a cult or something like that, and him being part of some mind control program. You know, and again, it's all hearsay, but you know, here's the proof in the pudding as far as he goes. When he said that something about he finds 9/11 theories to be I don't know the exact quote, but pretty much, you know, pissed on the 9/11 truth movement with that statement, you know, and in my opinion, WikiLeaks, for the most part, what have we really seen with that has really shaken anything up besides the first, you know, the first, what was it, from the shooting from the helicopter? You know, that was the only thing that really shook anything up. The rest was stuff that we already knew, in my opinion.
I want to touch on another thing because, you know, being in Connecticut, you're very central to a lot of governmental federal systems, one of them being the prison system. How do you feel about the increasing criminalization of laws that are increasingly putting people in prison for things that used to be legal, like having a lemonade stand or letting your kids play in the front yard?
It's crazy.
I'm sorry, I didn't get it. What did you say there?
It's so crazy. It's so ass backwards. It's just unbelievable, the fact of, you know, the things that you read about here and there, and you know, just the fact that people don't have control over, you know, their kids anymore, and just the fact that, you know, the state wants control over it, you know, what vaccinations you take and you know, there's just every facet of your life. And as far as like Connecticut goes, the main thing I see here too is, like you said, prisons. But the other thing would be farms. You know, we don't have a lot of farms, but there is a concerted effort to get the last, you know, few small farms into, you know, big agriculture and buying them and either bulldozing them or putting them into, you know, they don't want small, you know, New England organic farms anymore. That's not in their plans, you know.
I think actually it's kind of good news that it's kind of waking people up, how the government's kind of overstepping its bounds. Like, I saw that the GMO issue's kind of waking a lot of people up, and the, you know, what, we can't have our own garden, and, you know,
right,
we can't have raw milk. And I think a lot of the natural health people, you know, it's a lot of people are being woken up that way. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. I have people on my friends list that I went to high school with, and that's the only reason I think that they haven't defended me. You know, a lot of the other stuff that they're touch and go with, you know, they may say, you know, some of the stuff that, but as soon as I post something about GMOs, you know, they'll like that comment, or they'll, you know, I'll get messages from them saying, hey, you know, thank you for letting me know about this or that or the other thing. So, I mean, I think there's, you know, and that's the thing about it. We're touching so far, so many different issues, that eventually something's going to touch home with you, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an advantage of what we have. And I think the people that, you know, are smart in certain areas need to get that information out there as much as possible. You know, and I think that, you know, in that sense, the alternative media is doing a great job. It's just, you know, there's just so many different ways people can go with things. That's, you know, but as far as that, yeah, that's one thing I think that that and marijuana prohibition, I think everyone is pretty much on the same page about. You know, I don't think there's anyone out there. Monsanto's a good company, or like, you know, not too many people that still say, you know, cannabis and hemp should still be, you know, illegal. So we're making baby steps, you know, for every few steps back, we make a few baby steps forward anyway.
Yeah, and being as young as you are, you're 31 years old, and so you're really just, in a way, starting out, you know, in the world. I mean, I know you've been out there for 10, 15 years, but you're still in the beginning, and a lot of your friends are also there. Have you seen a lot of your friends imprisoned or having problems with the prison system or the parole system? because of cannabis use or lightweight crimes or just being pulled over for no reason and having a problem with a cop. Tell me about that atmosphere there.
Well, here's the thing. You know, me personally now, I've been harassed by cops since I was, 15 or 16 years old. Now, I will say I did hang out with a bad crowd coming up. But, since then, how many people has, the fact of just being harassed, for no reason and whatnot, it gets to people. And as far as the jails go and everything, it's so messed up. Once I have friends that got in a fist fight at 17, 18 years old, maybe someone got hurt badly or, something like that. So, these kids have gone and done 5 years in jail, and it didn't help them out at all. They came out working when they went in, and they come out, and everybody's on drugs because Big Pharma has everybody, everybody around here is pretty much hooked on some type of painkiller. And it's epidemic proportions to where, people, what happens once you can't get your Oxy or your Percocet or whatever, they switch to heroin, and then, from there, where do you go? You steal, you end up in jail for whatever, then you end up, you get out, you go on methadone, and, it's a big cycle, and it's terrible. I can't really think of any other words for it. The whole East Coast is shattered with it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know Connecticut pretty well, and I know that the police are pretty tough and pretty numerous over there, and it's a very conservative, quote-unquote conservative atmosphere, meaning oppressive, I think, So I was just curious if, and have you seen it increased in the past 10 years, or... this is something that you've seen a problem increasing?
Yeah, definitely. Well, now, see, here's the thing. When I was younger, the cops were different. They were, a lot of them, they would, if, you had a little bit of pot or something, they'd throw it on the ground. If you had a few beers, they'd smash them, get rid of the beer, type thing. Nowadays,
right.
No matter what, you're getting locked up, It's a revenue thing, like anything else, and here's the thing too. These kids go to, if you look at most cops, not all, and I don't want to generalize, but a lot of them were kids who were, picked on in school or had a problem with, with people, whatever the case may be. And they became cops because they wanted to make other people's lives a living hell. Not all. I know some good cops, but there's a lot of it seems around here that were just like, for some reason, they want, it's a power trip. And it seems like in the academies nowadays, and in fact, I talked to someone at the academy, it seems like it's being promoted to them to, like if someone gives you a problem, like then you're supposed to tase the person right away, then instead of, even talking to them or, the fact of the matter is they don't even know the laws that they're enforcing, and they don't understand the difference between a policy, it's policy and a law, and the fact that we still have, we still are supposed to have rights. Like, the fact that I've been told that I'll be jailed for questioning a cop or, or stuff like that, or I'll be pepper sprayed for questioning someone, it just goes against everything that, we've been told as Americans that we had these rights. And it's so backwards. It's really like the Stasi, and as far as it goes, it's only going to get worse because, they want this stuff. They want these, trigger happy cops out there, and they want people to be scared of cops, I don't know. It's crazy though. It's insane. I never thought it would be like this,
Well, it's very interesting to have your viewpoint as a firsthand witness to all this, Justin, especially since you're active and an activist yourself. We've only got about 30 seconds left in the show. I'd love to have you back on the show. And is there anything you want to say before we have to end the program?
I just want to thank Mary Lou and Libby for having me on. It was great talking with you guys. And besides that, If anyone wants, they can listen to us, me and Brian Stavely, Dose of Reality, Wednesday night.